passing lanes. Regis nodded. "Gontalgrim, ah, wait till ye see it," Brunner went on. "We'll catch us a puente and be on our way. Silvery moon, I say. Aye, we'll find us a priest there to do the deed, and then we'll set to chasing Obuld and his dogs back into their holes." He continued on, muttering to himself as much as anything, for the notion of a long road ahead had sent Regis into some of his own ruminating. Yes, he'd travel to Gontalgrim, but might that be the end of the journey for him? Should he choose to go south from there instead of east to the Silver Marches, he was fairly confident that he could find Dorregardo and the Grinning Ponies early in the summer, with enough time to go back to Delphuntal and the waiting arms of his lovely Denala. The door to the mansion opened then, and Catti Bree came out, Penelope and Kipper beside her. "If he fights off the first try, you might consider just killing him then and there," Kipper was saying. Drizzt and Wolfgar moved back to join them.
"Here now, what's that?" Brunner asked.
Catti Bree showed him a ring on her hand, golden and set with a black gemstone. "Stored within this ring is the spell we need to trap Puente's soul." She rolled her hand, revealing a huge gemstone, red as blood. "Ruby?" Drizzt asked.
"Sapphire,"
Regis corrected, staring at the gem and licking his lips.
"Phylactery,"
Catti Bree corrected, and she tucked it away.
"Ye said if it don't work," Brunner said to Kipper. "Ye thinkin' it might not then?"
Old Kipper sucked in his breath.
"It is a difficult spell."
"Me girl can cast it."
"Oh, indeed," said Penelope. "The ring Kipper has loaned her holds the spell intact. But still it is a difficult conjuration, and one an unwilling target can fight, sometimes successfully."
"An unwilling dwarf," Kipper added, "is never an easy target of any magical spell."
"Nor an easy friend,"
Regis quipped, drawing a glare from Brunner.
"Kipper has shown me the spell. I have practiced," Catti Bree said. "If the ring fails, I have this."
She reached under the fold of her white gown and produced a silver scroll tube. But Kipper couldn't help but shake his head.
"Better to just destroy the vampire if he resists the magic," he said. "Trap the soul is difficult to enact. Only a mage of great experience can do so without the scroll, and even with it, I fear that you are not ready."
"Do not underestimate her," Penelope put in, and put her hand on Catti Bree's shoulder. "She has the favor of a goddess shining upon her, and is wiser in the ways of the world than her youthful appearance suggests."
"Yes, yes, I know," Kipper said. "Well to you all, then, a farewell and a fair road. I hope you find your lost friend."
He bowed and went back inside, and the companions took turns bidding Penelope farewell, then started off down the hill for the gate to the Ivy Mansion, the road beyond, and the trails beyond that.
"There are rumors of giants roaming the foothills of the spine of the world," Penelope called after them.
Wolfgar grinned.
"Aye," Wolfgar answered her. "We might have to see to that."
"What was that about?"
Catti Bree asked when they were on their way again.
"Adventure," Wolfgar replied. "The same thing it is always about."
Chapter 11. Pawn to Queen Four.
"Speak not a word unless you are directly commanded to do so." Tosin Armgo's fingers flashed to his daughter Doomwheel,
the two standing side by side, as ordered, on marks Berylips or Lauren had scratched on the ground.
"Do not move,"
she had warned them, the gravity in her voice impossible to miss,
Something was going on here, Tosin understood, and it terrified him. Never had the Zorlarans been friendly to the House of Armgo, of course, but this was even beyond that measure of animosity. Berylip, a noble daughter and a high priestess, had been scared when she had ordered them to their spots.
"What do you think?"
Dumweel started to ask. But her whisper became a shriek as the heads of four venomous snakes bit into her back one after another. The girl swooned under the burn of poison and the shock that Berylip was still so close nearby. Her legs wobbled beneath her as she slumped to the floor and she went to one knee. She would have slumped lower, except that a strong hand grabbed her under her upper arm and yanked her back upright.
"Weakling," Berylip whispered in her ear. "Iblith. Perhaps I should drag you away and feed you to my driders, so that the matron mother will not have to suffer the disgust in looking upon such an abomination as you."
"She is a noble daughter of House Barrison del Armgo," Tosin said.
Berylip laughed and roughly shoved Dumweel before walking around to stand before the pair once more.
"That says so much about the fraudulent second house of Menzo Baranzon, does it not? That they seek the beds of Iblith to expand their ignoble family?"
Tosin's eyes flashed, and Dumweel expected him to return a verbal barrage at that, but surprisingly, he stood perfectly quiet and perfectly still, except that his jaw quivered just a bit. Dumweel thought that curious and out of character, but then she realized that her father was not looking at Berylip any longer, but was staring past her. The younger Armgo sucked in her breath, and despite the continuing burn of the snake bites, forced herself to stand taller. Behind High Priestess Berylip's Orlaren came a procession of drow such as she had never seen before, such as she had never imagined before. Male warriors flanked the central figures left and right, marching with precision, in perfect step, arms and armor sparkling with magical power. Between those ranks, on a floating translucent disc that shined purple and blue, sat a woman bedecked in grand robes, laced and bejeweled with intricate designs of spiders and webs. A five-snake scourge rested across her lap, the serpent heads alive and writhing and clearly aware of the scene before them. Berylip spun around and fell to her knees, eyes lowered to the floor. Should she do the same? Dumweel wondered. She glanced at her father, who stood perfectly.